From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The pandemic has exacerbated New Hampshire's existing housing shortage. On the home ownership side, we're in a total seller's market now, with prices substantially higher than a year ago. And for renters, the supply of available units remains limited to almost non-existent in some communities. Today in The Exchange, another look at the housing market, what's driving these trends, and what solutions exist. Listeners, if you're in the market to buy a home, what's it been like for you? If you're seeking a rental or offering it, what's your perspective? Let us know. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or call in 1-800-892-6477. And Exchange listeners, we are, of course, keeping an eye on the president's coronavirus diagnosis. We'll have updates from NPR throughout the day, and we'll discuss this on The Exchange soon as well. Our guests, as we talk about real estate right now, are Alyssa Margolin, Director of Housing Action, NH, and Russ Tebow, President of Applied Economic Research in Laconia. A big welcome to both of you. Russ, I'll start with you. Everything I read says seller's market. Prices are way high. They stay on the market for a day or two. People are paying way above asking prices. What is going on, Russ?
Well, it's really a peculiar and ironic housing market right now. On the one hand, we still have a fairly weak economy. We're down almost 60,000 jobs since the peak, pre-virus peak. And you're absolutely right, Laura. Home prices are up 14% year over year. Rents are up 5%, which exceeds the increase in renters' income. There's almost no houses on the market. And although vacancies are up a little bit, they were at least pre-virus, they're still only 2%, which is less than half what we'd normally expect. So whether you're trying to buy a house or rent an apartment, this is a tough market for you. And normally in a weak economy, you'd expect more vacancies, more homes on the market, and it's really ironic.
Yeah, and I'm trying to figure it out, Russ, because it does seem like a time when people are feeling uncertain about their employment. People have lost jobs or lost hours. It doesn't seem like a time when people really want to move. Everything's so uncertain. So why are we seeing this extreme seller's market? A house in my neighborhood sold in one day, above asking price, cash.
Yeah, what it is the downturn, the economic downturn is very much focused on low and low moderate income households, waitresses, construction workers, people in the accommodation lodging industry have been hit hard. But a lot of the economy is still zooming along. People working at home, they're making money. Interest rates exceptionally low is a big part of it. People moving here from Boston and New York because they can. Anecdotally, I have a friend of mine's son who lives in Manhattan, pays $5,500 a month for an efficiency apartment, and said, "Dad, find me a place in New Hampshire. I only have to be here be in New York 2 days a week." So there's a lot of different pressures. We started this year with a very low inventories of both rental and ownership housing. So there's a lot of factors at play.
Well,
all pointing in the same direction.
Yeah. A little bit later in the show, we'll talk to a realtor in North Conway, an area that I think is seeing a lot of the kind of out-of-state activity that you were talking about, Russ. But Alyssa, how much are these trends that Russ talks about in the home buying market being seen in the rental market?
Well, as you noted, Laura, in the opening, and as Russ just articulated, we had a shortage of affordable rental units in New Hampshire before the pandemic, and we still very much have that shortage. Our vacancy rate is just below 2%. And, the good news is that's slightly up from the year prior, but certainly not enough to have a standard kind of fair and balanced rental market with a vacancy rate of somewhere between 5 and 7%. And you also see folks who are staying put, which is good in terms of, public health protocol, because we need folks to have a place to stay home when it's important to stay home. But it's really, really tough if you need to move because we just don't have the inventory.
And that 2% vacancy rate, Alyssa, that's statewide. From what I understand, in some communities, it's a lot less than 2%.
That's right. And as you get closer to the job centers, that data point gets smaller.
What does a 2% vacancy rate, Alyssa, mean, you know, on the ground in terms of someone's ability to A, find a place, and B, find a place that they can afford?
Right. Yeah. So we're talking about, you know, the typical 2-bedroom apartment, which at this point, you know, it could be close to, you know, $1,400 a month. So you're talking about a household that needs to earn about $53,000-$54,000 for that to be affordable. So think of all the great contributors to our community whose households don't have that income or have been impacted by some economic loss due to the pandemic. And you can just quickly see how there really are almost no options for an affordable rental unit if you earn, say, less than 40.
I want to remind our listeners that you can join us as we talk about New Hampshire's housing market. We're looking right now at rentals and home ownership. A little bit later, we'll talk to some realtors and get their perspective on the home buying and home selling market. But right now we're focusing on both, and we want to hear from you. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Or give us a call. Tell us your story. Ask your questions. It's 1-800-892-6477. And Ross and Alyssa, here's an email that just came in from Cassia. I'm a local healthcare worker in Laconia. I've been commuting from Concord for a year and want to live closer due to the weather. It was a nightmare trying to find a rental, Cassia says. Folks from New York City and Georgia were making cash offers to live near the lake since they could work from home. I need to be close to the hospital to support this community. Crazy times, Cassia says. Wow, Cassia, that's a commute from Concord to Laconia. What do you think, Alyssa? Do you hear stories like Cassia's?
Yes, and you know, think about the important role Cassia is playing in serving us during this time. And I think it's important for us to remember not to take our eyes off the pipeline issue. And we were very focused on that as a state and as a nation in making sure we had public-private partnerships to get more affordable housing built, really asking our communities to turn from a no in my backyard culture to a yes in my backyard. I mean, don't we want Cassia in our backyards? I know I do. If I'm at the hospital and I'm ill, and I think we need a market that supports, you know, people like Cassia.
Well, and I think I know what you're getting at, but just tell us a little bit more, Alyssa, what you mean by that pipeline issue.
Yeah, so affordable housing development, right? It's tough sometimes in our state to build new affordable rental units. We get pushback from communities who claim that they want to keep their communities as they are. We hear about preserving the rural landscape, and all of that can still be done while we build more affordable housing options for our community. Pre-pandemic, when we had some of the lowest unemployment, a very strong economy, one of the vulnerabilities of our economy at that time was around the shortage of affordable housing. And I think that's why the governor, you know, convened a task force to start looking at what we can be doing as a state to encourage more development on the ground.
Russ, what kind of stories are you hearing from people like Cassia? And by the way, you live in Laconia as well, so you probably appreciate that she wrote in.
Absolutely. What happened? What's ironic? Another irony of this is that if you look across the state, rents are lower in Coos County and Belknap County than they are in Hillsborough and Rockingham, but so are incomes. So if you look at the whole affordability issue, it's right across the state. Even though rents may be lower in the northern part of the state, so are incomes. So there's pressure right across the board. When you get into, let's say, maybe Concord and north, maybe north of Concord for sure, the issue becomes rents are lower, and therefore you can't afford to build new rental units. We're seeing some good activity in places like Dover, Manchester, Nashua, in terms of construction of new rental units. But once you get out of those sort of hotbeds, traditional hotbeds in the state's economy. It's really a wasteland in terms of the ability to add new inventory because rents are so low. To build a new two-bedroom unit, you're probably looking at least $2,000 a month, $2,500 a month in a lot of markets. And there aren't many people north of Concord that can swing that. So much harder to add inventory north of Concord. But it's
That's interesting, Russ. Yeah, so you're saying the rents are lower north of the White Mountains, perhaps. But it's to the point where it's not worth it for developers to build rental housing. It's kind of a downward spiral there, Russ, huh?
It is. We need more inventory. We know that. We've needed more inventory even before the epidemic hit. But it's very difficult. Now, the Housing Finance Authority, New Hampshire Housing Finance Authority, is doing an excellent job. They're right on top of this issue. They do a great job. Heather McCann, the head of their research, does a great job informing people like me of what the numbers are. But that's what's going on. It's just very difficult to add inventory, particularly north of Concord, I would say.
Let's take a call. This is Ian calling in from Vermont. Hi, Ian. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a comment more that it's a little bit of a national problem and a little bit referring to the last call, that the building of rental housing is complicated because you always have property tax, and property tax keep going up and up and up. And so the portion that a landlord has to factor for the property tax, you know, I think as a nation, we need to figure out how we're going to fund the schools and get away from the property tax, because in Europe, property taxes are relatively low or very low, but they fund their schools differently. So,
sure, they have VAT taxes and all sorts of different taxes than we do.
Exactly.
Ian, are you involved in rental housing or the housing market?
I actually have a house that's empty or gutted, and there's no incentive to kind of fix it up, because if you fix it up, the property taxes go up and, you know, the rents are relatively low. So it's you know, a catch 22. Very little. So,
yeah, Ian, I'm glad you called. And Russ Tebow, this is exactly what you were talking about. Here's a house sitting empty, but it's not worth it for Ian to fix it up. What do you think, Russ?
Yeah, we have high taxes. And the thing is, the landscape, that's a landscape that's very different as you move from community to community. I know, Laura, you live in Concord. I had a developer who was developing in Manchester, wanted to do some units in Concord because you have a good economy with the state government and whatnot. And the taxes were the burden that he cited in saying, I can't do it in Concord. I can't do what I'm doing in Manchester and Concord because the taxes in Concord are so much higher than in places like Manchester and Bedford. Very low tax rate. I have a client that's trying to build a couple of hundred units in Bedford. And part of the reason that can be done in Bedford, part of it's a better economy, but part of it's also that Bedford's tax rate's pretty low. So it does discriminate against some communities and their ability to add new units.
Alyssa, what do you think? What are the disincentives that you see here in New Hampshire against building the rental housing that both you and Russ have said we desperately need? Go ahead, Alyssa.
I think Ian and Russ are making good points about the inherent costs that developers and owners of housing take on and how it's so challenging because they're passing on those costs to their tenants. And how do we as a state get our arms around this so we can provide more affordable options for folks, so we keep, you know, everyone in our community and we keep our state strong? And so that's why we've been so focused at Housing Action New Hampshire on encouraging a state housing trust fund, which provides that public-private partnership, you know, so one public dollar leveraging $7 in the private market and passing those savings on to the tenants so that we can have more affordable options. And we also need more tools at the municipal level. We need to look at policies that reward communities for building more affordable housing options and diversifying their housing stock. And then finally, we do need to get to this kind of softer cultural piece about appreciation for and acceptance of and even celebration of affordable housing in our communities.
Well, and as we talk about disincentives against building more rental housing, Lauren wrote us on Facebook, who says the ban on evictions impacts far more than the tenants. It has a major impact on the property owner as well. Lauren, thank you for writing. And Alyssa, this is a huge issue that's been going on with evictions now against the law because of the pandemic. But landlords have been saying, look, this is really hard on us too. We need to get paid. What's the way out of this, Alyssa? What do you think?
Well, you know, just to clarify where we are on evictions, our governor issued a state moratorium on evictions that expired at the end of June, just at the time that we launched a housing stabilization program to help folks who were struggling to pay rent due to pandemic-related income loss. But then recently, the CDC has issued a national eviction ban, and that is limited to folks who meet, you know, certain criteria. They have to, you know, earn less than a certain amount of income. They have to make best efforts of getting assistance. They need to substantiate that their eviction would likely lead to homelessness or crowded co-housing. So there, you know, still a number of steps to take. Evictions can still happen if you're conducting criminal activity or damaging property or some of these other issues. But the big picture is right now in New Hampshire, all of these interventions, whether it's policies like a moratorium or the New Hampshire Housing Stabilization Program, are working, right? We're actually seeing evictions stabilize or come down in our state. We are in the middle of a pandemic, right? So we need to make sure that if you have to stay at home, you have a home to stay in. The bad news is by staying in place, we actually have fewer units on the market. And so that's really impacting people's ability to move around if they wanted to go to a new job. And then finally, to this point about landlords have expenses too, that is very true. Housing Action New Hampshire, our membership is made up of mostly landlords who provide affordable housing. And I can say that this New Hampshire Housing Relief Program has been really important, right? Because tenants can go to this CARES Act money and apply to their local cap agency and secure rent payments that they're unable to make themselves.
So there's assistance for landlords who might be struggling due to the ban on evictions from the CDC, Alyssa?
To clarify, the assistance is for the tenant, but that
I see.
Comes in the form of rent that goes to pay the landlord so the landlord can pay the mortgage.
Okay.
And lots the utilities of eager- and the property tax and all of that.
Lots of people are eager to jump in on this topic, which shows us how big it is. And let's go next to Sarah in Concord. Hi, Sarah. Go ahead. You're on the air. Thanks for calling in today.
Hi, Laura. And thanks, Alyssa and Russ. I have kind of a question that I couldn't quite formulate as clearly as I wanted to because there's so many competing concerns. But I'm wondering if we're looking at, or if any developers are looking at, returning to models of housing that aren't the traditional apartment like we might think of it. I know there are some luxury micro lofts in Concord and Manchester, but I'm wondering about things at the lower income scale where in the past it might have been called a rooming house or like dormitory style housing or something nicer than a rooming house. I know that wouldn't get us through our workforce housing issue, but if some of the seniors in our state who may be in housing that's too much for them moved into something smaller, closer to services, would that free up some inventory for younger folks and families who are in that workforce age bracket?
Oh, Sarah, I'm so glad you called. And Russ Tebow, you and I have talked about this before. While a lot of people need housing, there are other people who live in these giant houses whose kids have all moved away, and there's one or two people rattling around these huge houses. What do you think about Sarah's call, Russ?
Well, I think it's very pertinent. And I recently gave a presentation to the statewide housing conference, and I started with the house I was born in. all the way through 11 different houses, including the condominium that I'm living in now. And in most New Hampshire communities, you could not build any one of the houses that I lived in. Some were on too small a lot, some were on duplexes, some were multifamily high density apartments. You couldn't, in many New Hampshire communities, particularly the rural ones, you couldn't build any of them. So one of the impediments to innovative housing that Sarah's talking about is our zoning ordinances are rigid and obsolete in most communities. So it's an impediment. I go back to my childhood. My parents, as some of your listeners may recall, were both shoe workers in Manchester, and they could afford a house. They could afford to own a house. It was a two-family house. People upstairs helped pay the mortgage payment. In most New Hampshire communities, you couldn't build that unit. So I think one of the impediments to innovative housing that Sarah's in a quest for is that our zoning ordinances are very biased towards four-bedroom colonials on 5 acres of land. And most households don't need that anymore.
Wow. Sarah, thanks for calling. Here's an email from Nathan. My wife and I were renting in Chichester for 6 months before COVID hit. Our landlord decided to capitalize on the very high prices of homes and put the house up for sale. Nathan says, luckily, we were in a position to buy it, but the thought of searching for another place to buy or rent was a scary one. The COVID real estate market was a huge factor in us deciding to buy the house we were in at the time. Alyssa, what are your thoughts about that email? Thank you, Nathan, for writing in.
Well, I mean, I'm pleased to hear that Nathan was able to secure a mortgage or had the resources to buy that home. And I think that others may not have been in that same position. And we need to consider that as we think about what kind of economy we want and to make sure that we have housing options for everyone. One bill that was in the legislature last session that didn't quite make it through, was about notice. What happens when a landlord wants to raise the rent more than 5%? Well, we heard testimony at the initial house hearing from tenants who went to look for other options, close to jobs and their kids' school, and there was just nothing. And so how there are so many impacts to having this hostile market, because it really starts to impact the stability of a family and kids and your job. So we really need to make sure that we continue to chip away at these barriers, as Russ just mentioned, the zoning barriers, again, the culture, the resources to subsidize the pipeline, the affordable housing development. If we're really going to climb our way out of this, and we were kind of on our way to making great progress. So hopefully we can continue to keep this front and center as a key issue in our state so we can get back to work.
Well, and Alyssa, I know you need to leave us soon, but I did want to ask you one last question. You mentioned earlier your organization works with both those who need housing and property owners. So what are you hearing from landlords these days, whether about the costs of providing this type of housing or the evictions? Are they feeling discouraged and kind of like our caller from Vermont who said, it's just not worth it? What are you hearing?
So from the members of Housing Action New Hampshire, I am hearing some frustration with kind of the same old challenges when they go to propose development in communities, and also just optimism because they know there's a market waiting for them. When they finally have the patience and the tenacity to carry through a wonderful new housing project in a community, they're filled up so quickly.
Wow.
And they're usually well received, right? Someone who builds homes, leaves an economy in its wake. They usually, communities that thought they were opposed, once it's built, usually start to celebrate as soon as folks move in. So You know, I think we still need to make sure that we don't give up and that we partner with communities, that we celebrate the ones who are doing it right. And it's my job to make sure that the affordable housing developers have the tools and resources that they need so they can meet this market demand.
Well, Alyssa, it's always good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
That's Alyssa Margolin, Director of Housing Action NH. Coming up, we will talk with someone from the New Hampshire Community Loan Fund. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, we're talking about New Hampshire's housing market in the midst of a pandemic. Listeners, let us know your story. Have you been trying to buy or sell a home? Have you had trouble finding a place to rent? Send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And along with Russ Tebow, we're joined now by Jen Hopkins, Director of Single Family Housing at the New Hampshire Community Loan Fund. And Jen, welcome. Good to have you.
Good morning, Laura. Nice to be here.
So how is the uncertain economy for hospitality workers, retail workers, and so forth, Jen, how is that affecting their housing stability?
Well, Laura, we definitely see that with the homeowners that we're working with. The New Hampshire Community Loan Fund looks to get capital to hard-to-get places in the communities around New Hampshire, helping people who are typically underserved by conventional lenders. And housing is a big part of that, along with childcare and other nonprofit groups. But we focus a lot in the housing area on manufactured housing, manufactured homes, used to be called mobile homes. And we focus there because the home prices are so affordable, with an average new home sales price about $65,000. You can own a manufactured home for less than renting, but they're almost entirely shut out of the conventional mortgage picture. So we do focus there. And we see that manufactured homeowners are mostly first-time home buyers, more seniors, and in job areas that definitely show up as essential in the pandemic. Workers in food service, in grocery stores, in hospitals, schools, and farming that are critical to keep working, critical to keep a roof over their head. And as the earlier discussion was talking about, the very low inventory of homes at an affordable price to buy, we really like to highlight the role that the manufactured home market in New Hampshire serves for that price range that really is accessible for somebody with a good steady job and a modest income to be able to be a homeowner.
Wow, so that's interesting. You're talking about the real role that these homes play in providing that affordable housing, cheaper than renting, as you said. Why are these homes, Jen, as you put it, traditionally shut out of traditional mortgage markets?
You know, in part, it's the price range in a real estate market that is a lot set on people are paid by commission based on sales price. So realtors and lenders and all through the system, if you have a choice of selling or financing a $60,000 home versus a $300,000 home, and your the pay for the people who are doing those sales and that financing is based on the size of the price range of the home, it's just a much smaller financial revenue off of that. So you need to be motivated for the by the homeowner need, by the need in the community to fill that need for homes in that price range, I feel like there's also some old stigma about manufactured homes as well, that are this old picture of before manufactured homes were even on anybody's radar screen, before they were regulated and built, you know, not to any strict standard. And now they're built to a federal code that is good quality, good energy efficiency. But that old picture of like a home that is almost, people don't see manufactured homes in their community. What we try and highlight is the value in the home, the quality in the home, and the way that there are 36,000 people in New Hampshire who live in manufactured homes that have a good roof over their head. They're building equity in there. It's a great asset, just like any other stick-built home would be.
So that's interesting. So a banker who might get a commission on the size of the mortgage says, gosh, for a house that costs $65,000, it's not worth it. But a person who might need a manufactured home doesn't have $65,000 in cash, most likely, Jen. So is that where you guys step in?
That's exactly where we step in. And we saw things like, you know, somebody would go out and buy a manufactured home, you know, the home of their dreams, small home on a piece of land in Ware with a stream in the back, exactly what they wanted for $80,000 that they bought with credit cards, because they went to their bank and the bank said, we don't do mortgage loans for homes like that, for manufactured homes. So if you can imagine the fear of the interest of paying your credit card rate to buy an $80,000 home, which is affordable, but you don't want that on your credit card.
No,
but that's the gap.
Yeah, that so does that's not sound like a good strategy.
Right. Our loans are meant to fix that problem, that it's just a fixed rate, good long-term loan. But we do it just for manufactured homes because of that need and the value that it brings for all of those homeowners in the state that we know are doing well right now. Some of the same challenges, of course, that you talked about earlier, of job losses or hours cut. But we are seeing also that even, you know, as the market is so hot and people are, and lenders actually are shrinking their credit box for who they will lend to. And so if the recovery right now is kind of, I think of it like K-shaped for people with wealth, or with good jobs, good savings, you are seeing a healthy economy right now. But for people who are not in that picture, you're really struggling. And we have seen people shut out of other home purchases because everybody else is paying cash. The market is so hot, the prices are going up. And as they're looking more for a value price range, land more on manufactured homes. So we have seen more people buying, including the inventory problem that I think Russ mentioned, of there are almost no homes available to buy.
But Jen, we talked earlier about, you know, Russ especially emphasized the role that zoning plays in communities, and that is a reason why sometimes more affordable housing options are not available. What do you find in terms of that with manufactured homes?
Yeah, we would love to see more zoning in towns to allow more manufactured homes and manufactured home communities. We do know that there are, of the roughly 500 manufactured home communities in the state, and we work with about 130 of them that are cooperatively owned by the residents. The residents are making the decisions about how the park is run. That we know there's something like 300 vacant lots in those cooperatively owned communities that could be filled with new homes tomorrow. They're zoned right. They're already permitted. It's a vacant lot in a neighborhood that's already developed and permitted for those homes to come in. So that's another route that we see more and more people taking, of there's nothing out there to buy. I need something in the right price range. And if you can think of, you know, looking for a vacant lot in a cooperatively owned park, go out and pick your home, pick your colors, pick your kitchen, exactly the home that you want. You need to think a little bit like a developer to see an empty lot and a set of plans and a, you know, wait for 4 months. But because the homes are built in a factory and transported up, the whole process is so much faster. And the zoning is already right. That was your question, that there is an opportunity there for more inventory exactly at the price range that people need, that we're excited about seeing more and more of that happening.
All right. Well, it's good to talk to you, and I really appreciate you being with us today, Jen. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Laura. Thank you.
That's Jen Hopkins, Director of Single Family Housing at the New Hampshire Community Loan Fund. Russ Thiebaud, before we take a short break, I'd love your thoughts on this type of housing. Jen made the case that it could really fill a role here in New Hampshire, but that there are roadblocks. So go ahead, Russ.
Yeah, I think Jen's absolutely right. And the Community Loan Fund does a great job in filling a void in the lending and development market. But I think the key word that Jen mentioned that has stuck in my mind is stigma. Some buyers are concerned about the quality of the homes, some communities are concerned, and some lenders are concerned. The quality of manufactured housing, what we call mobile homes now, in a good park is excellent. But we have this concept that it's a, you know, 8 foot wide, older aluminum box. And that's not the case anymore. These units are built to federal standards. They're safer than, far safer than they used to be. They're outfitted much more conventionally. And I think it is an opportunity that's underplayed despite the Community Loan Fund. So there's some stigma on the part of buyers, maybe on the part of communities and on the part of lenders. I'm on the board of one of the state's banks, and we lend to buyers of mobile homes, and our loss rate is the same or lower than conventional homes. The last thing I'll say, for older households and young households, they're a good solution.
Let's take another call, Russ, and Jeannie is calling in from Deerfield. Hi, Jeannie, go ahead.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Thank you for taking my call. I am a realtor here in Deerfield and just wanted to push back a little bit, politely so, to suggest that realtors, and I can't speak for bankers, but we would be delighted to orchestrate mobile home sales in our community. We welcome all types of housing opportunities in Deerfield and are certainly trying to embrace the shortage and need. So I would suggest instead that it is not for lack of commission or earnings as to why we might shy away from mobile home, you know, inviting mobile home sales or working these types of transactions, but the cost of land has in some cases doubled the cost of the actual mobile home unit. And that is what is really creating challenges to open up opportunities for mobile homes in at least our community.
So, oh, Jeannie, I'm glad you called in. If I could just ask you a quick question, Jeannie. Jen, who was on with us a minute ago, said that sometimes buyers who want to buy manufactured housing have a hard time getting a mortgage. What do you think? Have you seen that, Jeannie, with the people you work with?
It is hard to get a mortgage on an older unit that may not have some of the same safety features, such as tie downs or separations of, you know, a dug well from an older septic systems. There are a lot of nuances in financing that are challenging. So I believe the age of the mobile home can be addressed if it doesn't have some of the additional restrictions that complicate a transaction. So yes, it is frustration. And I think, again, the cost of the land, you know, if we have sales data to support the value and the buyer is qualified for that value, then it can happen. But there are some issues that require a cash transaction to happen just because some of these issues can't be overcome.
Yeah. Jeannie, it's really good to hear from you, especially given your experience with this. Thanks for calling in.
Well, thank you for talking about this important issue.
And we will talk more about it after a short break. Two realtors will join us on the strong sellers market that they're seeing, one from Concord, one from North Conway. All that plus your calls and emails. So stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. This hour, New Hampshire's housing market. We're in a strong seller's market right now with supply low, prices high, and home selling in record time. Exchange listeners, it's been great to hear from you. Keep your questions and comments coming in about the real estate market, whether you've been having a problem finding a place to live, whether you're a buyer or a seller. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can comment on Facebook or you can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Helping us out for the hour is Russ Tebow, president of Applied Economic Research in Laconia. And joining us now are Chris Powles, a realtor in Concord affiliated with Keller Williams, and Chris McNevich, a partner at 603 Property Group in North Conway. And welcome to both of you. And Chris McNevich, I want to turn to you first because you are in one of those areas, North Conway, where I read that people are snapping up vacation homes, buying them, and moving to New Hampshire from Boston and New York and other big cities. Is that really going on, or is that an urban legend, Chris? What's happening?
Yeah. Well, Jane, first of all, sincere thanks for having me on as part of this discussion here this morning.
Sure.
I would say that, yeah, from what you've been hearing, it's absolutely correct. You know, there are a lot of people from some of the southern states and, you know, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, certainly New York, Connecticut, even as far as Pennsylvania, that you know, may have been coming up here for many years and have always thought about maybe, you know, moving up here, retiring, having a second home. But I think with the advent of what's happening, certainly with COVID and just the total disruption to life and itself, I think that, you know, people are now taking advantage of that right now and they're moving up here. And that's creating certainly a market that, you know, houses are flying. They're going on the market, and within 24, 36, 48 hours, they're going under contract. So, yeah,
wow.
That's definitely what we've been seeing up here.
24 hours. So who's a typical buyer these days that you're seeing in North Conway?
Yeah, so your typical buyer, really, from what I've experienced, has been, you know, that potentially that mid-30s business professional, let's say, where, again, maybe they don't have to be in the office as they had to before, Monday through Friday. So that now gives them the opportunity to come up here and buy that second home and work from it. All the way up to, Jane, you know, maybe those in their, you know, mid-60s or even late-50s who thought that maybe retirement might be coming, you know, 3-4 years down the road. But now, you know, given the situation, they're just ready to kind of get out of the city and get up here now and really start taking advantage of, let's say, a more quiet or peaceful type of environment from, let's say, that of the city or more of a metropolitan area.
And I want to bring Chris Powles in Concord in just a moment. But one more question for you, Chris McNevich, please. We heard earlier from a woman who's a nurse at Laconia Hospital, but she can't find a place to live in Laconia, so she's got to commute from Concord. She's worried about the upcoming winter and making that commute in bad weather. What's available in North Conway, in sort of vacation-y places like the Lakes region? What's available for people like her who, you know, don't fit that sort of high-powered executive profile?
Sure, understood. So it's actually, quite honestly, been a challenge. A lot of the, let's say, second homes that have been out there typically, or people that have owned them, that have been able to use those as long-term rentals. And now that a lot of these homes are being scooped up by people either looking to retire early or potential investment properties for, you know, some of the Airbnbs and VRBOs, it is becoming more of a challenge for people to find even rentals. So it's really timing in my mind. You know, if it's been more difficult to purchase a home, and, you know, you kind of want to stand by, you know, and maybe save a little bit more, what have you. Even finding a rental is difficult right now. It's a hard place for people to be in.
Got an email from a listener who says, I live in the Mount Washington Valley. The real estate market here is crazy. Houses go on the market at inflated prices. And within 1 or 2 days, this person says, there are multiple over-asking price offers, mostly from second home buyers out of the area. This listener also says, in addition, many more reasonably priced homes in the area are being purchased by investors to use them as Airbnb short-term rentals. This is causing major problems here for young people who want to purchase a home. Young families who are now renting and want to buy their first home are being shut out of the market. So that's from a listener in the Mount Washington Valley. And Chris Powell, I want to turn to you. How about the Concord market? How much is it similar to what we're hearing about from North Conway and the Mount Washington Valley, Lakes region? And how much is it different?
I would say the typical buyer maybe profile is a little different. You know, in the Concord area, we're not seeing so many people from out of state come in. You know, we've had probably 4 or 5 open houses in Concord in the past, you know, 2 or 3 weeks. And I bet 90% of the people that came through were renting in Concord currently. So I think that's one of the differences.
How about similarities? Are you seeing houses go, you know, very quickly, like Chris McNevich told us?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think that everybody's, you know, talking about it, the low inventory, you know, tons of people out there buying, low interest rates. So everybody that ever thought about buying seems like they're, you know, trying to make that happen right now and capitalize on those low interest rates. So, you know, anywhere from 5 to 25, you know, offers per home, you know, 24 hours, 48 hours. You know, realistically, you probably could accept, you know, the very first offer within 12 sometimes. So yeah, it's a tough time to be out there for buyers. And, you know, it was working out really well for sellers, as long as they don't have to buy again in the area.
Well, right. That's the other thing. You shouldn't really sell your house if you don't have a place to go. Chris Powell, so what strategies are buyers having to adopt if they really need a place to live? What kind of strategies or tactics have you seen, Chris Powell?
Yeah, no, we're, you know, so there's a lot of things that go into making the offer. Obviously, the price is, you know, important. But on top of that, you know, inspections are always important for sellers. So some people are waiving inspections or maybe writing in. We've seen a lot of people write in nowadays that they are not going to, you know, ask for remediation if unless any one item exceeds like $5,000. So trying not to nitpick things. You know, people are writing in that they're going to pay this price regardless of appraisal, or similarly, they'll say, you know, we'll pay $10,000 or $20,000 over the appraised value. So all of those things are in play. And then, of course, you know, being flexible with closing is something that most buyers can accommodate nowadays. So, you know, if a seller is trying to buy in the area, you know, finding a buyer that can be really flexible with their timelines may be important as well. So, you know, those are kind of the big categories that we've been focusing on with buyers to help them, you know, win a bid.
Wow. So Chris McNevich, last question for you. What is your best advice for someone who's trying to find a place to live in your area in North Conway that won't, you know, break the bank?
Right. So I think the best advice that I could give is to be looking for a home that, you know, has a lot of solid things in place, you know, and that's not always possible. But what I'm talking about is, like, a roof. Is that in good condition? Is the septic in good condition? Some of the bigger items that are going to be huge expenses. So start with that and then look at the rest of the home. You know, maybe some windows need to be replaced in time. That's okay. Obviously, painting, we all know about that. That's not an issue. But look at some of the bigger ticket items. Really make sure that those are good And then from there, make the assessment of, okay, over the next 5 years, if I can pick this place up at this particular price, these are all things that I can work on. You know, if the refrigerator's old, if the kitchen's old, if the cabinets are old wood, and you know, you want those replaced, that's okay. But sometimes you're going to have to make those concessions. You know, as we always say, it's not like it is on TV.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have to challenge yourself to understand that the market is what it is, and that if you really are sincere about picking up a place to live, that you're going to have to make hard decisions, some concessions, and then move forward to then take care of that place, to invest in it over time.
Focus on the fundamentals,
really,
then.
Yeah, I think that that's kind of the way to go. And again, that can still be a challenge, too, because there are a lot of people out there who will snap these up and put the work in themselves. But you just have to be reasonable with your expectations at this particular moment.
Well, Chris McNevich, it's good to talk to you. Thank you for being with us.
Yes, thank you so much, Laura. I really appreciate the time.
Take care. That's Chris McNevich, partner at 603 Property Group in North Conway. Chris Powles, how about you? What if somebody really, really needs a place to live? What's your best advice for them?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think Chris said it right in the beginning there, or at the end, was expectations, you know. So we definitely, you know, talk to people about expectations, what they can expect to get, you know, what they expect, you know, can expect in a home inspection, you know, for their budget. And then really just being aggressive with your offer, you know, if you really need it and really want it, you know, be as aggressive as you can take it, you know, take it to the limit. Cause you know, even, you know, people have been making really amazing offers and coming up short. So, you know, you almost have to, you know, to kind of take it to the next level in order to kind of secure housing. But other than that, you know, I tell people, you know, try not to get too discouraged if you don't get the first one.
Right.
It's something that's happening to everybody. Everybody's in the same boat. It's not, you know, that it's only happening to you. So I think just expectations and persistence.
Chris Powles, it's good to talk to you too. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
That's Chris Powles, a realtor in Concord affiliated with Keller Williams. And Russ Tebow, just to close it out with you, here's an email from Paul who says, New Hampshire doesn't have an affordable housing problem. We have an affordable wage problem. Every state around us has a higher base wage, which drives development of more quality housing. Food, fuel, oil, and other living expenses are the same as in other states with higher minimum wages. Why can't New Hampshire, Paul asks, start paying people a living wage? Could you focus on that end of it as well, Russ, please? Do we have an affordable housing problem, or just do people not have enough money?
Well, of course, it's a combination of both, but that's a very good point. We always look on the housing side of things and the price, housing price side of things, but we don't look as much on the income side. Remember, we are a tourist state to a great deal, particularly, again, north of Concord. So we have a lot of lower wage jobs. And so that's a big part of the problem. Of course, if wages were to bump 10 or 15, actually 20%, then two things would happen. Housing would look more affordable, but there would be fewer jobs probably. So it's really a dilemma. There's a chicken and an egg issue there. The other thing that I would say, Laura, reflecting back on the comments of both Chris's, is that one thing we haven't talked about is the condo market. And the condo market is actually hotter than the conventional single family home market. The number of sales are up 15%, prices are up 20%. There's basically no inventory. So I think a lot of people are adapting in this market to downsizing their expectations and their unit by shifting their thinking from a conventional single family home to a condominium.
What's your best advice, Russ, to listeners who are looking right now either to buy a home or find a rental? Again, we heard earlier from Melissa about the severe shortage there.
Yeah, it's basically, I think being realistic is all you can do. I think that things are not going to get better soon. The Fed is committed to low interest rates, and low interest rates are a significant part of what's driving this market right now. So I think that you just have to be very careful, buy a house that maybe less house than you wanted, maybe not as good a location, maybe not as nice a lot. You have to be realistic in this market, and maybe your dream house is out of reach right now, but hopefully you'll find something that you can get into this market in and participate in the appreciation. You know, home prices up 15% year over year. You want a piece of that action if you can possibly get it.
Well, it's interesting. Everybody this hour has said that low interest rates are driving the interest in buying a house. On the other end, though, Russ, prices are really high. So I'm just trying to figure out the middle ground there.
Prices are high because with lower interest rates, people can bid higher for the existing inventory.
All right. Russ, it's always good to talk to you. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Laura.
That's Russ Thibault, president of Applied Economic Research. That is a real estate and economic consulting firm based in Laconia. And today's show was produced by Exchange fellow Jane Vaughn. I'm Laura Kanoy. You've been listening to The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.